From the authentic soul of Bernie Siegel, MD, comes Mind Health Matters, a show that reflects Bernie's passion to reach people struggling with all of life's challenges, not just the physical ones, so that each person can live life fully with the understanding that, as Bernie reminds us, we only have today. Believing that we are all here to love one another, each in our own unique way, Bernie has crafted eternal truths and the timeless wisdom of the ages. Join Bernie as he shares his powerful journey through life while offering us special nuggets of his sacred wisdom.
Welcome, everyone. Good day. I'm Deborah, and you're listening to Bernie Siegel, MD of Mind Health Matters, and where Bernie actually shares many of his stories throughout his life journey. And this is a Dream Vision 7 radio broadcast here at 1510 AM Revolution Boston, reaching five states just by turning the dial. And for everyone out there, go on our Dream Vision 7 radio site, which is Dream Visions, all one word with an S on the end, the number 7, radio.com. And you can see right on the host page all the different times Bernie's show is aired. Actually, with the Dream Vision 7 station, it's Wednesday through Friday, 12 noon, and then 12 p.m. at night, or 12 a.m., should I say, at night. So welcome and good day to you, Bernie.
Thank you, Deb.
You're welcome. And we're going to talk today about love. Love is real. We're going to talk about a lot of things, but love is also scientific, correct?
Yes.
So speak to that.
Well, I mean, the simplest statement is that love benefits the giver as well as the receiver. And I think it was Elizabeth Kubler-Ross used to say that love is giving with no expectations. So people understand that because I always remember this woman who was dying of cancer. She had the husband, children, and she kept complaining that she loved them for 4 hours, and they only loved her back for two. Mm. You know what I mean?
Yes.
You know, it could have been 400 hours into it, but, you know, she was, like, using statistics that she had loved them more than they had loved her, and, I mean, that's not love. So, as I say, love does not... You're not expecting a reward or a return. You're doing it because it feels good to do it. I mean, I love holding doors open for people when we're going in and out of buildings. I don't, you know, expect anything from them. I'm doing it because I feel good making it easier for someone else. And the other, I couldn't find a copy of the book in my house from another old friend, Ashley Montague, the anthropologist who studied love. And he wrote a whole book on it, all the benefits and advantages of love. And, he, you know, he basically said it's necessary for survival to have this kind of affection and love and what it does for your growth and immune function and everything else. You know, when you talk about it with newborns, for instance, in the 1800s, orphanages had almost 100% mortality rate because the kids were brought in and not touched because their theory was we're spreading infections, so let's isolate these kids and, you know, don't handle them and touch them. And that's why they were dying. Because they weren't being touched, weren't being loved. And there was something in the paper maybe 3 or 4 months ago about premature twins are born. They're in an intensive care unit, so parents can't go in and touch them. Hopefully nurses will massage them and touch them. But one of them became critically ill, and they said to the parents that this child is not going to survive. So if you want to hold it now, you can, because we don't have to isolate it and protect it from anything. So they gave it to the mother, who held it against her bare chest and breasts, and the baby turned its head. And this is a baby, everybody, you know, is limp and everybody's expecting to be dead shortly, turns and starts sucking on the nipple and came back to life.
Mm.
Now, you know, that's science, if you know what I mean.
Yes.
We shouldn't need to, you know, have that happen to wake up to it, because when you massage newborns, they gain weight faster and the brain develops faster than children fed the same amount but not touched as much. So all these things, I mean, love comes not just in the thoughts, but in the acts, the touch, the relationships, the connections. All those things keep us alive. And especially, I have to add, my statement always is that the biggest public health problem on the planet is loving children. That when children are not loved, they become addicts, self-destructive, unhealthy lifestyles, all of these things. And statistics verify this. I mean, that those who say, my parents loved me, see, think of the benefits of that. Your parents loved you. You felt loved by your parents. This was done with Harvard students and other studies, too. But the students, 35 years later, if you've said, my parents loved me, and I may add, your parents could be alcoholics, mass murderers. The key was, did they love you?
Right.
If the answer was yes, then one out of four, approximately, had suffered a major illness by midlife. If they said, my parents didn't love me, then 98% had suffered some major illness in that time. And I just had an email this morning from a woman who has problems with alcohol addictions and so forth. And I said, I don't even know her, if you know what I mean. She's seeking help from me. But I said, it relates to your childhood and your past. That's why you're an addict, and that you have to abandon that past and, in a sense, reparent yourself and start loving yourself. And I told her, put up pictures of yourself as a baby or a child. Hopefully she has some, and love that child. And then you start behaving differently because you realize the child is worth something. So loving yourself is important, too. That's not selfish or egotistical, because when you love yourself, then you're capable of extending that love beyond yourself to others, and then all the benefits that come from it. I also see love not just in the physiological side, but you see, when you're loving, you're capable of growing and healing because of the message your body gets. When you're not loving, then your body is in a stress mode. In other words, living with fear, anger, whatever. Then immune function goes down, cortisol levels, stress hormone levels go up, and you're protecting yourself. And then the body doesn't grow and heal, because all the energy is going into protection. You know, in case you had to run or climb a fence or, you know, get away from some animal or something else. Because your body doesn't know what you're fearful of and is ready to protect you. But when love is involved, then the message the body is getting is indeed that you like living, want to stay alive, so all those functions are turned on and protecting you and caring for you.
Right. Don't you think that, you know, I'm one of those people that were brought up in a tumultuous childhood and didn't feel the love, but then from a higher perspective learned that I don't have to stay in that victim world and I can choose love and choose a better way. And don't you think that choice comes in at some time when you realize what love is and that you can change your life?
Yeah. I mean, that's part of what I went on to say to this woman, that you can abandon your past.
Right.
Reparent yourself, reprogram yourself. Most people don't do it because it's so difficult. I mean, you've been hypnotized literally as a child by what you hear from your parents. So it's
right.
Hard to break that spell.
Sure.
But when you wake up to that awareness, as you did and others do, and say, wait a minute, you know, because I said to her, you're in charge of what you think. Nobody else decides that. And so when you're capable of realizing that, then you can change your thoughts.
Right.
And the other is, if you said, well, I was never loved, you know, I don't know how to love. I mean, my sense of humor is, have a role model, WWLD. See, what would Lassie do? So if Lassie's your role model, you learn how to love and relate to people. But I mean that literally, that you act and behave as if. William Saroyan, the author, said, everybody alive in the world is an actor, but almost everybody alive is a very pathetic actor. So you're given a lifetime to rehearse and practice to become the person you were meant to be. And so if you see it as rehearsing and practicing and finding coaches and directors to help you, then it's not about failing, doing it wrong, being a bad person. You're working at it. You have a goal, and you're working at it. I always say it's like doing a painting. I mean, you have to complete it. If it doesn't look right, you touch it up, redo it. So you're a work in progress. And as long as you keep working towards that, people will accept it. You know, and they accept you, and they will be coaching you because they know you're willing to listen when you screw up and not make an excuse, you know, not blame somebody else or something, but say thank you, I apologize, and then move on. Because it's interesting, oh, yeah, some lady sent me like a 10 or 12-page letter. I mean, God, rambling on and on and on. And I emailed, fortunately, she put her email address at the end, so I emailed her back some comments, and she emailed me. I'm so disappointed you didn't write me a letter.
Oh. Okay?
And that I didn't make enough comments about her letter, which I really have nothing much to say about it. I mean, she is rambling, and, you know, it's her thing, if you know what I mean. She needs to pay attention to what she is saying more than I do. But I said to her in another email, you decided to be disappointed. You know,
right.
I said, yes, I prefer emails. I didn't put this in the letter, but you see, she's judging me. How does she know my house didn't burn down yesterday,
right?
You know, or that somebody in my family was hit by a truck and I'm in the hospital with them, you know, so.
But she's,
behavior,
again, she's crying out for love.
Right. She's blaming me. See, it's my behavior.
Right.
She could have said, hey, thanks. Any other comments? I was interested in what you thought of this or that. And then, you know, we could keep dialoguing. But her reaction is, I'm disappointed. Yeah, she wanted a 12-page letter back. I don't have time for a 12-page letter back to her. And I will say this, that if I, you know, felt like writing a 12-page letter, you're darn right I would. If she had stirred something in me, you know, I might have spent all that time writing back to her and said, thank you for what you've, you know, taught me or pointed out to me. But again, I've learned that my reaction is my reaction. You know, it's not imposed on me by other people. So I always say, I don't give my lifetime away by empowering other people and being bitter, resentful, about their behavior because they didn't love me enough, like that lady in the hospital.
Sure, sure.
You know, to watch her die, and I may add, I have to tell you this, the family, the kids and the husband started a scholarship in her name after she died. See, they're still trying to make up for her criticism. I mean it. They were busy trying to do things in her name because of how she made them feel. You know, my sense is, again, they're doing it out of guilt because of what they heard from her, you know,
mm-hmm.
criticizing them. They're not doing it out of love for the world, but out of guilt, trying to, so that someday, I think it was in a Woody Allen movie, as a matter of fact, the guy's mother, you know, who's dead, appears in the clouds and starts talking to him. And I think that's the kind of thing I felt these people were looking for. I wish I could remember the name of the movie. But, you know, they're waiting for her to appear in the sky and say, okay, you made it up now.
Yeah.
Everybody relax. That's not love. And one more that I was impressed with, the musical Don Quixote, where Don Quixote comes to Aldonza, the barmaid. She's abused by guys in bars, sexually, physically. And here comes Don Quixote and says, Dulcinea, I have sought thee, sung thee, dreamed thee, Dulcinea. Now I found thee, and the world shall know thy glory, Dulcinea. And what do you think she says to him? Don't torment me with your tenderness.
See?
And that's why I always say to people, use love as a weapon. See, we have these terms, kill with kindness, torment with tenderness. So if you want to drive people crazy, love them. I mean, she had never been exposed to this. But you see, what I learned as a doctor was if I keep acting like Don Quixote, keep loving my patients. I mean, these are people who were totally self-destructive. I'm not talking about the typical patient, you know, who's coming in and you have a relationship with. I'm talking about people who are totally self-destructive, show up in your office, don't do a damn thing that you suggest that would be good for their health, but you don't reject them. And then they ultimately realize, because the opposite of love is indifference, rejection, and abuse. But what they realize is, he really loves me. He cares about me. He's not rejecting me like everybody else in my life. Then, suddenly, they begin to take care of themselves.
Right.
Whether it's, you know, 100 pounds overweight and change their diet and exercise or stop drugs and alcohol or whatever it is. But the persistence in the love, I found, was the most important weapon of it all.
Yes, well said, and hang on, because we need to take our first break, Bernie. So everyone out there, don't go away. We'll be back more with Dr. Bernie Siegel.
Have a charity you'd like to help by raising money? Having a fundraising gold party is a fun, unique way to accomplish just that. It's as easy as inviting friends, relatives, and neighbors to bring their gold and or sterling silver jewelry they'd like to sell. They don't have to buy anything. It's the reverse. The attendee receives a check for their jewelry, and the organization receives 15% of the proceeds on the day of the event. The Party of Gold Company is women-owned and Better Business Bureau accredited. Since we have no overhead, our prices are better than jewelers. Have a fundraiser for auxiliaries, committees, schools, baseball leagues, churches, and nonprofit foundations. For more details or to book your fundraiser, call Deborah Bove, Gold Specialist, at 508-431-1959. That's 508-431-1959. Or Deborah B. at partyofgold.com. Do you wish to have inner peace while living in challenging times? Are you unhappy and don't know why? Life consists of either a path of love or fear. When we choose a path of love, we learn and grow. If we choose a path of fear, we stay stuck in negativity. The time is now to heal ourselves and the world by choosing a different way. Through the path to your power, your inner light, you will find self-love and experience amazing changes. You can have inner peace, wonderful relationships, good health, and a flow of abundance. Complete the circle of illuminating love using our tools and learn how to retain your power throughout life. To learn more about the path to your power and the Divine Love Within consultations, call Deborah Bove at 508-226-1723. Or go to lovebyintuition.com.
Dr. Bernie Siegel's writings and the 12 books he's published so far reflect his passion to reach people struggling with all of life's challenges. His latest, A Book of Miracles, inspiring true stories of healing, gratitude, and love, is both riveting and belief-expanding. Bernie has produced wonderful resources for everyone, like 365 Prescriptions for the Soul, daily messages of inspiration, hope, and love, and faith, hope, and healing. Bernie's books also include those like Love, Magic, and Mud Pies, a great resource for parents, and delightful loving stories like Buddy's Candle to help children of all ages cope with the loss of a loved one, be it a pet or a parent. To purchase Bernie's books, CDs, or DVDs, go to BernieSiegelMD.com. And while you're there, empower the mind, body, and spirit with Bernie's heartwarming articles.
You're listening to a Dream Vision 7 radio broadcast right here at 1510 AM Revolution Boston, and you're listening to the infamous Dr. Bernie Siegel, MD of Mind Health Matters, and today we're talking about everything around love, and I'm sure we're going to weave it around to all other areas as well. If you want to connect with Bernie, you can simply go on his site, which is BernieSiegelMD.com. Siegel is S-I-E-G-E-L, so it's BernieSiegelMD.com. You you'll be able to read some of his articles, order his book, the Miracle Book, which is his latest, which is wonderful. So again, that's how you would connect with Bernie. And so there's a lot of benefits for love, as we know, especially with the children, and children learn from their parents. You know, what do you feel is the most important benefit? Really, for me, it's all about feeling the love and then being love yourself.
I think what we provide, when you say the most important benefit, if you think of the children, it gives them the freedom to be who they are.
Yes.
Robert Frost said, home is a place that when you go there, they have to take you in. So that doesn't mean you have to like everything your child is doing or your patient is doing or the people at work are doing, but the love, it creates a relationship. So, and I really had to teach our children that anger and love can go together. That if I don't like how I'm being treated, you know, there's appropriate anger. I can speak up. I can say, you're not loving me enough. You're not showing me love. And they had to learn that, because to them, anger, you know, meant you don't love each other. But they got that point and that message, and it freed them to make noise also in terms of taking care of themselves, loving themselves. But I think when you grow up with that, you're not concerned with what most of the world is concerned with. What do other people think of me? What are they going to say if I do this? If you come from love, and I mean that, you know, I look at my life, grandparents, parents, wife, I grew up with support and love, so I could be different. You know, I was on all the famous talk shows with people criticizing me for the things I was doing as a doctor with healing, and you're blaming your patients if you ask them what's going on in their life. You know, if you're relating their life to their health, and if they don't get well, it's their fault. I mean, these are misinterpretations of what I was teaching people. But still, I could handle that because you knew you had support and love when you came home. So you could be who you wanted to be when you were out in the world. And ultimately, people learned that what I was saying wasn't so crazy, you see. Mm. And if it worked, okay. They began to then imitate me. And I'd say again that when you're comfortable, feel secure and loved, then you can go out in the world. You don't have to prove anything or get attention. You have the attention. See, the bullies in high school, as I said, the indifference, rejection, abuse. So you want to get attention? Cause trouble. I mean, one of them, we have five children. One of them came to me one morning, and I always gave him a lot of credit for this, because he's in the last bedroom at the end of the hall. He walked up to me, he said, Dad. I said, what is it? I'm not getting as much love as the other children. I said, what are you talking about? He said, you have five children. We should each get 20% of your love. And I looked at him, you know. I said, wait a minute. I said, your brother is driving us nuts. So he gets 40%. You know, and he then it suddenly occurred to him, oh, okay. It isn't that you don't love me. It's that he's driving you crazy. And so then he could go back to his room and not feel rejected, and I'm at the end of the hall because they don't love me as much as, you know, my siblings who are closer to their bedroom and so forth. And most kids, you see, won't walk up to their parents and say, hey, why don't you love me as much as my brother? Because they're feeling I'm not loved. That's mm-hmm. the answer. And they sit in their room depressed. And literally consider suicide, 70% of high school students have. And I've learned with them, too, from a high school student, because she was very depressed, and I was trying to help her. And she said to me one day, you're my CD. I said, what are you talking about? I'm a CD. She said, you are my chosen dad.
Hmm.
Yeah. And I thought, wow, you know, she woke me up to use that term. So, you know, it's such a simple way of explaining to people, I love you. You know, and all ages. I mean, it isn't that they have to be younger than me. There could be somebody even older than I am, and I say, okay, I'll be your chosen dad. And it's just a sign of love, that and it is so appreciated by people. And I know people, literally, who are alive today because I said, I love you. You need a father, I'll be your father.
Right.
I said, you're a divine child, I love you. And with time, they realized that. Mm. And another was, when I say reparent, you can, in a sense, rebirth them and say, hey, pick a new name. Let's start a new life. You know, I don't have to be Bernie anymore, see? Well, I was Bernard, but I picked Bernie because that was me, if you know what I mean.
Right.
And though my mother liked Bernard, I wasn't that kid. It was like too formal. So I'm Bernie. And, you know, people can pick and become that person. And as I said, you get back to rehearsing and practicing, and then you have a role model, and you can do it. Because you have this image in your mind of that person you want to be, and you keep working at it till you get there.
With the teenagers these days, there's so many that consider suicide. Do you feel that the foundation of love is key to keeping suicide out of someone's mind?
Yes. Yeah, I really do. Because it allows them... Well, let me say it in two ways. One, I've spoken to thousands of high school students, you know, in a big auditorium, and I've learned to not be afraid of saying this to all those kids. I said, I want you to know I'm here today because I love you. And if you need a father, I'll be your father. Now, you'd say, what are you, nuts? You'll have 500 kids call you up. No. The fact that you tell them is what makes the difference. That day, I had about three or four of the kids get in touch with me afterwards. But the reason I know I don't hear from hundreds is they walk out saying, he loves me. I must be worth something. You know, they heard what I said, and they knew I meant it. So they go home with a very different feeling and begin to care for themselves. And I've also, which broke my heart, you know, been reading stories to third graders and have a kid walk up, sit down next to me on the floor and look up and say, will you be my father?
Yeah.
Oh, boy.
That just melts.
Yeah. I mean, what's going on at home that he needs that?
Right.
And, yeah, I always say, yes, I'm happy to be your father. And I've come close recently to adopting children and fostering children. I mean, I know our home isn't going to handle it because I have too much going on here, and if I had teenagers here too, I'd be going nuts, and my wife isn't well, so there's a lot of caregiving, but it breaks my heart to read articles about these kids, so I've gone down to the, you know, family services, and I've talked to them, and I've written newspaper articles to try to get more people to get involved in these kids' lives and adopt them and you know, be a foster parent. And try to help in that way, you know, to focus attention on it. Because these kids, you know, when they're rejected, you're talking about a whole life. And you see, let me read these words from East of Eden. I'm not really reading them. They're in my head because they really struck me. All of us experience rejection. This is by John Steinbeck. And with rejection comes anger and the desire for revenge. And with revenge, guilt. And there is the story of mankind.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what did that hit me with? Think of all the things we read about in the paper. Well, just yesterday or the day before, this fellow who kills himself and his two sons.
Yeah.
You see, and killed his wife, I think.
Right.
Then, you know, the army officer, the psychiatrist who goes and kills other soldiers. And then the kid who walks into a school and kills people and then kills himself. You know, the one who shot the politician, the woman.
In Arizona, yeah.
Yeah. So if you said, what is their life story? It's about rejection. And they want revenge. So that revenge comes out. And then they feel guilty and they commit suicide, most of them.
Right.
But what my psychiatrist friend, it's interesting, Carl Menninger, he said aggression is normal. Now, that sounded strange to me. But he said, Bernie, it's how you use it. You know, and I was just thinking, like we just had the Super Bowl. your kid is out there on the field knocking other people all over the place. And you're applauding and cheering, you know?
Yeah.
You see, because that's healthy aggression. It's in sports. Or if somebody starts building a house, you know, and using a hammer and bang, crash, and cutting things up, but you're doing it in a constructive way. And one of his lines that I got such a kick out of was, what if you became a surgeon as a reaction formation to your destructive tendencies? And I love telling that to people. Mm-hmm. I really like cutting people up, but I didn't want to go to jail, so I became a surgeon. But it's again, that we need to know ourselves, and then you can also love the world in your way. See, not something imposed on you, because that's another thing adults do. Say, I want you to be this when you grow up. Take over the business. Be a lawyer. Whatever it is. And you lose your life making them happy. Mm-hmm. And that's why, again, you may commit suicide or do a lot of things. But you see, the healthy people, when this impressed me, and I had to really try to understand it, we were at a weekend workshop with all the famous self-help gurus, you know, a retreat that people came to, and I was one of the speakers. And at a lunch break, I was sitting with all these well-known people, listening to them talk about when they were suicidal. And I said, I've never been suicidal. And they said, we know you're not normal. And I, you know, of course, everybody laughed. But see, I was confused because I thought, how can you get up on a stage and give a sermon if you were suicidal? You know, you're not living the message. But then I realized that they're not talking about how they feel now. They were talking about their courage to turn away, in a sense, from death and suicide and confront life. And that's why they became teachers, because they went through the hell, learned from it, and are now teaching.
Right, exactly. And don't you feel that when one does feel the love and know the love, then they're able to go within and self-discover why they felt that way to begin with? And I think that overflows into the teenagers. If they felt the love and able to look within, self-discover who they are and what's making them tick, sad, or happy, then they can face it from there.
Yeah, that's how you save your life. I always say to teenagers, eliminate what's killing you, not yourself.
Right.
You see?
Very good.
And then you can choose life. And that's the key. You choose life. You don't choose what's good for you. The biblical message is choose life, because if you choose what is life-enhancing, everybody benefits. That's why I say choose your way of loving the world. Then everybody will benefit. You'll feel good, and the people you interact with will feel good. But if you say, what's good for me, it may not be good for anybody else. You know, it can get selfish. But choosing life benefits everyone.
I have to ask you, Bernie, being a medical doctor, how do you feel about these teenagers or young kids put on meds because of what they're thinking or not thinking?
Yeah, it drives me nuts.
Yeah.
When I lecture, one of the slides I show is an ad. And it says, I was depressed, unable to cope. I went to see my physician. I said, you've got to help me. He prescribed an antidepressant. I feel much better now. And I wrote to New England Journal of Medicine and Sandoz Pharmaceutical Company a few years ago. I said, would you do me a small favor? Put a line in that says, sit down, tell me what's happened, why you're depressed. Then you can say, I prescribed an antidepressant. But do you think this is appropriate, that people go into a doctor and the doctor doesn't even ask what happened? What if my family was killed in a plane crash and I'm depressed? Do I get a pill? Nobody to talk to, and they canceled the ad. But, you know, I was thinking about that this morning, because all these new, you know, all the new technology. I was talking about shopping. You know, you don't even have to go into a store. You just push, you know, all these iPads and so forth, and you can learn whatever you want, where it is, and what's the best price. I was thinking what we ought to do is have a medication system like that, you see. you turn the thing on, it could be your computer too, and you put in depression. And then it lists a whole bunch of pills. And you click on one of the pills, and it gets sent to you. Why bother to go to a doctor?
I want to hear more about that. We need to take a break. Everyone stay with us. We are with Bernie Siegel, MD, and his show, Mind Health Matters. Don't go away.
Songbirds with Dr. Gene Switzer will show us how intelligent pulses continuously flow in and out of us, creating a union between spirit and form, and how we can experience them as code breakers to live in harmony with ourselves and the universe. Part of Dream Vision 7 Radio Network, Songbirds is every second Saturday at 3 p.m.
You don't see them on the streets. In fact, you're probably not aware of them at all. But there are 100,000 of them right here in Massachusetts. They're homeless children. Child and family homelessness is a crisis in our community. Homeless kids are often transient, staying in shelters when they can, and even living in cars with their families. So they're out of sight and, unfortunately, out of mind. Horizons for Homeless Children is here to help. We're dedicated to improving the lives of homeless children and their families with programs and services to help kids learn and grow and help their families return to self-sufficiency. Join us in making a difference. Become a volunteer or make a donation. Visit horizonsforhomelesschildren.org or call 800-560-7702. That's horizonsforhomelesschildren.org or 800-560-7702.
Take a journey to a place of the divine love within with Deborah Beauvais on the Love by Intuition show, Saturdays 2 to 3 p.m. Our message is love in the purest form. The light within us all is a guide to recall our beginning, to learn to love self and humankind, to feel the higher power of our own divinity. To attract love, one needs to be love. Saturday 2 to 3 p.m., all part of the Dream Vision 7 Radio Network.
Would you like to be a radio star? Now there's a show that allows holistic business owners to test the radio wave waters with ease. Host your own show on the Global Holistic Exchange. Send your message over the Greater Boston airwaves and internationally via the internet. For more information, contact Deborah Beauvais, Deborah at DreamVision7Radio.com or call 508-226-1723. 508-226-1723. The Global Holistic Exchange is all part of the Dream Vision 7 Radio Network.
Join Dr. Bernie Siegel on Mind Health Matters every first Saturday at 3 p.m., all part of the Dream Vision 7 Radio Network. Bernie will draw from his inspirational personal journey, offering us special nuggets of his sacred wisdom. Listen in as Bernie reminds us to be fully engaged in life.
Back to Mind Health Matters with Dr. Bernie Siegel. You'll hear this show every first Saturday on Revolution Boston, 3 p.m., and it is a Dream Vision 7 radio broadcast. You can also hear Bernie's show Wednesday through Friday at 12 p.m. noontime and then 12 a.m. Twice a day. And every week you can hear that. So, and then also to some of our other affiliates, and you can find his show on iTunes as well. So, Bernie, we're talking about love in so many different ways and more seriously, and you mentioned about it's not the idea of it, it's the concept with the meds able to just be ordered without physician.
I mean, if you're going to go to a healthcare professional who doesn't even ask you about your life and just says, oh, you're depressed, here's what I do for depression, why bother to go to the doctor? You know, as I say, why not put in depressed, get a pill? Acid problem, you know, get an anti-acid pill. You know, you can make, and if you have trouble with the diagnosis, okay, go to a doctor. But if not, just get a mechanical response. Of course, you know, that isn't beneficial. Helen Keller, because you used the word talking a few times, and
yes, that
really reminded me of something. Here's someone blind and deaf from the age of four. And I like asking people, if you had a choice, you had tomorrow morning, you're going to wake up and you have to be either blind or deaf, which would you choose? Now, except for musicians, most people choose deafness. But Helen Keller's comment woke me up, too. It made me a better doctor. She said, I've heard of the stars, the rainbows, the play of light on the waves. These was I would like to see. But far more than sight, I wish for my ears to be open. The voice of a friend, the imaginations of Mozart. Life without these is darker by far than blindness. So One aspect of love and one aspect of true healing is to listen to people.
Right.
You know, then they know they are cared for and about. But I found more importantly, if someone listens to you, see, a good therapist or your family member, you go in and you sit and you talk for an hour, but you do the talking. You know, the therapist just goes, And at the end of the hour, you say, thank you, you're an angel, you've done so much for me. Now, what has the therapist said or your family member said? You say, how can that be helpful? You hear yourself, and you realize what needs to be done. As a friend of mine said, when you're hungry, do you get upset? I said, no, I get something to eat. She said, fine, then ask yourself what nourishment you need.
Right.
So that's what you realize, you see. You finally hear what you're saying and realize what I need to do. In other words, you could come into therapy and complain about your spouse, your job, where you're living, and after, you know, doing that for a few hours, you begin to realize, I need to move. I need to get a divorce. I need to change jobs. I mean, and then the therapist gets the credit for, you know, waking you up to what needs to be done. Because what I learned was if somebody came in and had a problem, again, whether it's patient or family member, and I said, here, read this, go talk to this person, they always said, you're no help. And I used to get a kick out of it because I did it as a test. But when I just sat and listened, they always thanked me for helping them because
right.
It became clear to them what needed to be done. And then they took care of themselves. And I may say, when you know yourself, you can then love yourself and not feel lonely. Even if you're alone,
exactly.
You're not lonely because you feel good with yourself and about yourself. And this is not, again, about ego or perfection or anything else, but that, you know, you're a child of God, let's put it that way. So there is something special about you, and you don't need anybody else to prove it to you.
Right. And it's a calming, it's a peace within when you do truly love yourself
right.
as is.
Well, the, you know, that saying, God loves you and so do I. I don't know where that came from, but if one feels that divine love, you know, that you are a child of God, and it doesn't have to have anything to do with religion, just that you are part of this. As a matter of fact, one of my questions again is, and the best answer I ever had was from a high school student who was obviously loved. I say, you're in heaven, you're on the admission line, you get to the head of the line, they say, you're next, how do you want to be introduced to God?
Mm-hmm.
And that's so that people understand that any separation, in other words, if you say, well, it's me, the answer is come back when you know who you are. I'm a doctor, come back when you know who you are. Because those are things that separate you from God.
Right.
But if you said to God, it's you, it's your kid.
Yeah.
And God says, come on in. And the
exactly.
high school student, I got such a kick out of him. I mean, to me, there's no question he's loved that he'd come up and answer like that. Because I asked all these students, and usually they just sit there staring at you. But his hand went up immediately. I said, what is it? He said, tell God his replacement is here.
Mm.
And, I, you know, that kid, to be able, you see, to come up with something like that, he's coming from a place where he's comfortable with himself and, you know, where you can be a clown, a comedian, a multiple personality. You can be all those things because, again, you feel safe with who you are.
Right. And that is quite profound. You feel safe with who you are.
Right.
And that's enough.
Yeah. See, the ugly duckling had to quiet his mind and his life in order to see his reflection as a swan sitting on a still pond. He never could have done it if he carried that bitterness and resentment towards his mother. There's one lady in writing to me said, my mother's words were eating away at me and maybe gave me cancer. She spent her life hearing her mother tell her she wasn't worth anything, an embarrassment, a failure, and was dressed in dark colors so nobody would see her and notice her. Now, yeah, I mean, she had a very destructive mother, but she didn't have to keep listening. She
right.
could have, you know, started again. Or I have to say to everybody out there, the teachers, the clergy, the doctors, the neighbors, the grandparents, they can all make that kid feel worthy and save them.
Right.
See, this is from a poem called Purple. The woman said in first grade, she was asked to draw a picture. And when she finished drawing it, the teacher starts yelling at her, tents aren't purple, purple's the color for people who are dying, we're not going to hang your picture on the wall with all the other children. She said, in second grade, Mr. Barta said, everybody draw a picture. He said, I left my paper blank. He came over to my desk, and think of her heart beating away, you know, because she didn't draw it. He put his hand on my shoulder and said, the snowfall, how clean and white and beautiful.
Mm.
Now, that woman never forgot that moment, okay, and wrote a poem later in her life about it. And I tracked her down because I put it in one of my books, and it is a group called Rosenberry Books, you know, published it, made it into a little booklet. But I think that's what we have to realize, that when you're in a position like a teacher or a member of the clergy or, you know, the doctor, whatever, where you're seeing people all the time and you can get that message across and change their lives. I mean, one of our sons ran a Subway franchise for a while, and I worked there, and I loved it.
Mm-hmm.
People thought I was nuts or that he was abusing his father, you know, taking advantage of me because people
yeah.
knew me. But I loved it because I love people.
Right.
You know, and when people came in, I would say to them, because they'd come in, you know, and say, I'd like a sandwich, please. I'd say, if you answer my question, I'll make you a sandwich.
Mm-hmm.
Look at me like, what's your question? And I would ask them the same questions I would ask people in a workshop, you know, whether it's how would you introduce yourself to God or a whole bunch of other things. And we got into wonderful conversations about life.
Right.
And feelings. And, you know, and I enjoyed that part of it, not just the mechanical part of making a sandwich, but of really interacting with people and making a difference in their lives.
Right. You were bringing them joy and love and really bringing them to the present moment of enjoying the life.
Just so those, you know, who are listening to this understand, I was at the bank and I said to the teller, see, what's the best day of your life? And the teller said, well, when I gave birth to my daughter. And somebody else in the bank obviously heard us and yells across the bank, no, that's wrong. And the teller says, what do you mean I'm wrong? And the person said, today is the best day of your life. And you see, it gets everybody in the bank thinking and in therapy in a minute. So that's why I love, you know, doing that and confronting people in that way. But then you get group therapy started.
Right. Right there in Subway.
Mm.
I love that, Bernie.
Right. The only people who didn't answer were always therapists. It was hysterical because I'd say, I'll make a sandwich if you answer a question. And the person said, I'm not here to talk. I said, are you a therapist? Yes. Why? And it really was 100% correlation that, you know, if their life was filled with talking, like that was their work, you know, they
right.
don't want to talk anymore. But you know what, it isn't work when you're really enjoying the people. And that's the key. Just figure out how to meet them. So whether you're, you know, working in a restaurant, because I had a landscaper. You see, you talk about love. This man is driving me to the airport complaining about his life and his business. He said, you know, my father was a doctor, and I saw what he went through taking care of people, so I thought I'm never going to get into anything like that. And I went into landscaping, and I do major work, you know, with full-grown trees and dig holes and put them in. And he said, and then people come out the next day after they put sticks in the ground, so I know where, and they say, I don't like it there. You have to move it. And I said to him, you know, you could have been a doctor. And he burst out laughing because it never occurred to him that you're going to meet people no matter what business you're in. And what you need to do is enjoy the people and relate to the people. If not, whether you're a landscaper or a doctor, you're not going to be happy. And I think once you say, okay, this is my way of relating to people. Oh, and another, I mean, I have to tell you all these things in my life because I found it very painful to be a doctor. See, if you love people, think of all the things you can't cure.
Mm.
And, oh, boy. And we're not trained to deal with that, you know, in medical school, the loss and the death. And because then you feel like a failure if your patient dies. I mean, I won't get into that. That's a, we ought to have a whole other program on how we handle death, you know, our mortality.
We but, should, yes.
Yeah, but now I'm almost forgetting to pop out of my head what I was thinking of.
And we only have...
Oh, I remember what it was. I had a veterinarian as a patient. When he came in, I said to him, look, I can't take the pain of being a doctor. I want to become a veterinarian. It'll be easier taking care of animals. And he looked at me. He said, no. I said, why not? He said, because people bring the pets in.
Yeah.
And he really helped me look in the waiting room and say, treat the people, see, not all the diseases, the people. And that's what one of my patients said to me. I need to know how to live between office visits. And I think when we love people and help them to live, then wonderful things happen.
Right. And that's your gift by being a medical doctor. You opened up, you were a pioneer of opening up and asking that question, what's going on with your life? And
yeah. And more, I'm getting more invitations to speak at medical schools, hospitals, and it's that's really rewarding to me, that when doctors will sit and listen, because 30 years ago, all they did was criticize and say, I can't accept that, you know, because what I was doing was beyond their belief or experience. But I always say my experience is what creates my beliefs. So if something happens, even if I can't explain it, I don't say I can't accept it. And I began to learn from those things. And then as belief systems change, then studies get done. So, you know, it can be, are you loved or not? I mean, one other example, because all these things that come up, you are adopted. And my question is, if your parents... Your biological parents develop cancer. Your adopted parents develop cancer, which makes you more likely to develop cancer. And the study showed that if the parents who adopted you developed cancer, you were more likely to develop it. And I think that's where you see the effects of relationships and love and loss and how much they mean to us.
Yes, and with that said, we have to say goodbye. And until the next time with Dr. Bernie Siegel, I'll say goodbye for now.
And it is a goodbye.
Yes, goodbye.
Join us next time on Mind Health Matters with Dr. Bernie Siegel. Until then, remember, be fully engaged in life, loving every moment as your unique self. In going deep within to discover ourselves, we can also discover self-love. Then, when we let our hearts make up our minds, we connect what our bodies do so well to the power of love. We can boost our ability to grow and heal along with our self-esteem. The sense of empowerment that results from this mind-body connection is one related to self-induced healing. When you add spirit to that connection, making a mind-body-spirit connection, you nourish your soul. For more insight, go to BernieSiegelMD.com.